Well, good morning, and thank you to the Michelle and Barack Obama staff. You guys really showed out with the vittles this morning. It's a beautiful day and a beautiful facility, so thanks to everyone who makes it happen. Good morning to our audience. Welcome to the meeting of the Board of Recreation and Parks Commissioners. Today is November 2nd, 2023. This board meeting will be conducted in person. All public comments will be taken in person only, and each person will be granted a maximum of 2 minutes for their public comment. The first order of business is a call for the roll. Takesha, can you call the roll, please?
Yes, President Semero. Commissioner Hutton.
Present.
Commissioner Tran.
Present.
Commissioner Lloyd.
Present.
Vice President Sanchez.
Present.
President Semero.
Present.
And we have quorum, Madam President.
Thank you. Next order of business is approval of the minutes. Can I please have a motion to approve the minutes from the October 19th meeting?
So moved.
May I have a second?
Second.
Takesha, can you conduct the vote, please?
Yes, President Semero. We have a motion and a second to approve the regular minutes of October 19th, 2023. Commissioner Hutton, how do you vote?
Aye.
Vice President Sanchez, how do you vote?
Aye.
Commissioner Tran, how do you vote?
Aye.
Commissioner Lloyd, how do you vote?
Aye.
President Semero, how do you vote?
Aye.
And the motion carries.
Thank you. The next order of business is general public comment. Keisha, can you facilitate the public comment?
Will do, Madam President. I will call the first three constituents to come up to the podium to make a public comment. You will be granted a maximum of 2 minutes. And if you have further comments, you may send them to our...
Keisha, I'm sorry. I skipped over Matthew. My apologies. Thank you to my trusty vice chair. Before we go to public comment, if we can do the general manager's update.
Thank you, Commission President. Good morning, commissioners, members of the public, staff, Matthew Rudnick, executive officer, filling in for our general manager, Jimmy Kim. I just have a few brief updates under our general manager's report. And before I go ahead and do that, I'd like to ask Deanne Dedman, our superintendent of the Pacific region, to introduce the staff here at the facility and talk a little bit about where we are.
Good morning, commissioners, executive staff, general public, fellow colleagues. Again, my name is Deanne Dedman. I'm the superintendent in the Pacific region for the Recreation Services Division. Welcome to the Michelle and Barack Obama Sports Complex here at the Rancho Cienega Sports Complex. We just renovated this beautiful building. It was over $40 million that we've done, both the here and the pool site. So feel free to tour after the meeting. More than happy to take you all around. But this facility also houses the Ira Macy Child Care Building, the Celeste King Pool, the Jackie Robinson Stadium, Dodger Dream Field. So there's a skate park in the far corner, the Arthur Ashe Tennis Courts, and we have a synthetic soccer field here as well. And so maintenance and construction, fully on board. I'd like to introduce them. We have our maintenance staff over in the back, led by Robert. We have our West Area construction team as well. I don't believe they're here. They're out and about fixing all of our park amenities. We do have our aquatic staff. They are over in the pool saving lives and making sure they're all there, but led by Tracy Goldberg. Thank you, Tracy, for being here. And then, of course, our Pacific Region recreation staff. They're out and about somewhere. Sorry, they were here very early setting up this morning as well. So thank you so much for being here. Welcome back to some of you. Welcome again to the new commissioner that we have. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Deanne. And then just a few brief department highlights. We just want to thank staff, both recreation staff and our maintenance staff and everybody involved in the amazing Halloween activities and events that took place this past week. We had over 100 free events for families and youth and community members throughout the park system. Also want to note that our winter registration for our Play LA program and our winter sports programs opens this Saturday, November 4th. For more information and to register to participate, please visit laparks.org/playLA. And then we have a variety of upcoming events, and you can always learn about our additional events throughout the park system on our website at laparks.org. At the commission's request, I also wanted to provide a brief status update on the community input process for the future use of the Griffith Park Pony Ride site, as it comes up frequently at our meetings, and we receive, you know, community input on that process. As you'll recall, the department's consultant PlaceWorks provided a presentation to the board back in September on the various tasks and activities that they're undertaking as they gather information and feedback. PlaceWorks has held 7 of 10 focus groups meetings to date, including meetings with Griffith Park stakeholder groups, animal advocacy organizations, and equestrian organizations, with the remaining focus group meeting scheduled for early this month. A draft historic resources analysis has been completed and will soon be posted and finalized on our website. The first of 2 town hall community workshops is tentatively scheduled for early December, along with the release of a public survey. Additional information can be found at laparks.org/pony-rides, and staff will continue to keep the board and the public informed on that process. And that concludes the general manager updates at this time, Commission President.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Matt from the commissioners? Okay, seeing none. Now, Tegisha, could you facilitate the public comment, general public comment?
Will do, Madam President. I will call the first three constituents to come up to the podium to make a public comment. You will be granted a maximum of 2 minutes. And if you have further comments, you may send them to our rep inbox at rep.commissioners@lacity.org. I have the first three come up. Lisa Levinson, David Santucci, and Zora Fahim.
No one should start. Okay. Okay, thank you. A little bit better? So, thank you so much. I'm Lisa Levinson, the campaign's director for In Defense of Animals, which is an international nonprofit dedicated to protecting animals. We have 250,000 members worldwide and 25,000 in the state of California. Ending the pony ride and petting zoo contract was a major step towards ending the exploitation of animals in Los Angeles. Now we ask Rec and Parks to implement a non-animal model instead of animal entertainment, which would perpetuate animal suffering. Los Angeles is a leader in ethical and progressive policies. This is a golden opportunity to choose the compassionate route. With stretched resources in our city, an animal model is not feasible and would require constant monitoring. Instead, we suggest a non-animal model like environmental education, which offers added benefits of deeper human connection with nature and exercise, with many options for people with varying mobility levels. The feedback form closed on August 31st, 2023. 940 comments were received and 83 additional letters and emails sent directly to RAP staff. The Rec and Park consultant did not include the 11,000 plus in defense of animals supporters who sent individual letters to Rec and Park directly. And that's why I'm here to urge Rec and Park and the commissioners to update the figure 2 graph where it mentions the affiliation with an organization or group, and update this data in that section on the bar graph to include the signatures that I just mentioned. Thank you very much for your time today.
Good morning. I'd like to thank you all for the opportunity to speak to you today. My name is Dave, and I'm here because I don't understand why this is even still a question, whether it's okay to exploit animals for human entertainment. We don't have circuses anymore with animals. You know, a lot of people want to call on tradition and say, well, you, oh my gosh, it's tradition. Well, there's a lot of traditions that have been changed, and for good reason. Women are allowed to vote now. If I want to marry a Black woman, I'm allowed to now. Tradition used to say that only certain things were okay. But in the words of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., the moral arc of the universe is long, but it always bends toward justice. Some people will have you believe, or they want you to believe, that if you don't put ponies back in Griffith Park, that someday nobody's going to be allowed to ride a horse on this planet. They want to confuse you with a lot of, quite frankly, BS. And the report that Dr. Sacker wrote when she was commissioned to go check out what was going on there has instances of ponies that were suffering from painful dental conditions and active saddle sores. And these are actually, it's not mentioned in her report, but these are criminal offenses of animal abuse. And I brought with me copies of California Penal Code 597. And it states every person who overdrives, overloads, drives when overloaded, overworks, deprives of necessary sustenance, drink, or shelter, or causes or procures any animal to suffer any of those things is guilty of a crime. And I would submit to you that if you guys put ponies back in Griffith Park, that the next time one of those ponies is overworked or deprived of water or anything like that, you all are the first in that chain of causation.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I implore you, err on the side of caution when it comes to morality and ethics, you guys. Thank you.
Hi, good morning. My name is Zora Fahim, president of Los Angeles Alliance for Animals. Recreation and Park creates safety standards in order to keep the community safe, and it is unacceptable for any operator to not abide by those standards. When renewing Mr. Weeks's contract, Rec and Park required the concession to be shut down at 90 and shut down at 95, which take in mind anything above 90, with ponies being hit, their needs not being considered as if they were pushed like they were machines, still very hot. These temperature requirements are reflective in comparable cities. Beginning November 25th, 2019, New York legislation requires carriage horses to not be worked above 90, including Chicago, which has the same standards. Regardless of these high standards, operators have a proven track record of breaking these guidelines consistently. Just as your operator, Mr. Weeks, who pushed elderly ponies in 95 degrees on August 14, 2022, we call the rangers and your rangers refused to regulate the safety standards because they mentioned it was not a penal code. I proceeded to relay the dangers of hot temperatures and I pleaded with the rangers. I said that horses heat up 3 to 10 times faster than human beings and certain temperatures can be very dangerous, internal temperatures for horses can be very dangerous. Then on another day, we got lucky when the rangers were acting haphazardly and actually shut down the pony rides and Weeks did not at 100 degrees, but did not require Weeks to return the tickets of the folks who already purchased tickets and were still proceeding to ride the ponies. So I pressed him again and I asked the rangers if they would take responsibility if a child got injured. They said no and then told Weeks to shut down the pony rides again. For this reason, we will not accept any form of animal entertainment to be replaced with pony rides because your operators have a proven track record of not abiding by safety standards and your city does not enforce them. Therefore, you're opening up yourself to a huge vacuum of liability. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. I'm going to have the next three come up. Inger Eplin. Christine Lee and Stephen Gumplow.
So I'm trying to not eat the microphone this time. Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for letting me speak for those that cannot speak for themselves, the ponies. I'm a Los Angeles constituent. I'm here today to urge the recreation and park to implement the non-animal model at the former Griffith Park and Pony Rides. I want you all to know that the old primitive ways, cruel animal acts are on the decline. Thank God. Many cities, such as Chicago, have banned horse carriages because operators continue to violate the law. And these cities understand that industries that use animal models are exposing themselves to a huge amount of liability, including New York City, who just introduced legislation to ban horse carriages named Rider's Law. I want you to Google that and see the misery. Which is a proposed New York City legislation that will pace out and ban horse-drawn carriages in the city and replace them with horseless electric carriages. The city are banning horse carriages because operators continue to violate the law and not abide by the shutting down at 90 degrees Fahrenheit. In August 2022, an elderly emaciated horse named Ryder collapsed on the 9th Avenue in New York City. While being forced to pull a carriage in the brutal summer, sadly, Ryder died on October 17th. The horse-drawn carriage industry is rife with inhumane treatment, injuries, and death. And this is actually no different than what happened at the pony rides. Ponies were working with saddle sores, ponies working with lameness, elderly ponies working in 100 degree Fahrenheit, a child's body dragged multiple times. The list goes on.
Thank you for your time. Thank you.
Thank you for your time and for what you do for our parks.
Hi, my name is Christine Lee. I'm a Venice resident, and I'm also a stakeholder and a community organizer for paddle tennis. We are a joyous community of paddle tennis players. Paddle tennis has been in Venice since probably 1962, and we're absolutely nuts about the game. I just want to talk a little bit about the success of Venice Beach Games last July. It was so awesome. I want to thank Sonia Young Jimenez and Melody Valenzuela, and Tracy Parks, of course, who ran it with Alex Stowell. Our group hosted about 25 kids from the 40 Love Foundation. They brought 25 amazing tennis players from Inglewood, and they tried paddle tennis and just killed it. And we had about 100 players, new players, trying paddle tennis. They really loved it. Daniel Wolf and a senior citizen, our best loved veteran player, tried to teach everybody how to play paddle tennis. Then we ran a free tournament, a Davis Cup style, with one senior, a pro player, at least two women, and then they had to be an A and B player. And it was just an amazing day because it involved everybody in our community, all levels. And it was a total blast. So I just wanted to say, you know, hope we can have more tournaments like that that are free. Now, when we try to run a tournament, it costs about $4,000 to run. So we have to, the entry fees can be about $40 to $60 to $80 per entry. So looking forward to working more with Sonia and Melody to try to do a few more days like Venice Beach Games. It was so great. And just want to thank you guys for letting us be a part of that. And also let you know that we've started a foundation with LA Parks Foundation to raise money for resurfacing of the paddle tennis courts. Our community is super engaged and we want to keep the courts as great as they can be. And with the help of you guys, we really appreciate everything that's being done. So thanks so much.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Steve Gumplow. I live in Santa Monica, California, and I'm a former president of the United States Paddle Tennis Association, so this may be a little redundant, but we're both here just to kind of give you an update. We spoke here about a year ago over the phone during the pandemic, and we were talking about getting the courts resurfaced at Venice Beach. So those courts have been there over 60 years, and they're like our national headquarters. They're our muscle beach for our sport, and we're very proud of it. And I just want to let you know that there's a very vibrant community there. We're hoping to get the courts resurfaced and the funding for that, and they do it about every 10 years. So just to talk very briefly about our organizations, I'm a member of the American Paddle Tennis Association. Christine has another organization with about 1,500 members on her online social media site. And we have Street Paddle, which is this company that does all kinds of fantastic events there. So we're very involved, very engaged, and paddle tennis is very important in Los Angeles. It's really the headquarters for paddle tennis in the world, and people all across the world come to Venice Beach and see paddle tennis on our 11 courts there. And we're really happy to be working with Sonia Young Jimenez and Melody Valenzuela and Tracy Parks. We've raised over $10,000 towards this court resurfacing project, and we just want to let you know what we're doing and that we're very proud to be a part of Venice Beach Recreation Center. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to have the next three come up. Rebecca Beach, Sherelle Caneo, and Teresa Masonette.
Hello, I'm Rebecca Beach from CD4, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak on behalf of the Griffith Park Pony Rides. My family recently laid my father to rest. Like many, we had a memorial slideshow sorting through reams of images and had to decide which life experiences should be highlighted as a true picture of his life. One which made the cut was an image of my 12-year-old father on a horse. He endured a tragedy at that age when his brother died in an accident. In order to heal after the tragedy, the family moved to the country for 2 years from the city. He was surrounded by cousins and animals. Those were only 2 years, but through his whole life, he talked about learning to ride a horse and how it was one of his cherished memories and helped to heal his broken heart. Decades later, all five of his grandchildren had their first experience riding horses at the Griffith Park Pony Rides. For one of his grandkids, it was the start of her equestrian career. Please bring back the Griffith Park Pony Rides. I'm acutely aware of how conflict and disagreement are tearing apart our world. I have my own anger and disappointments about the way the pony rides were shut down. I have questions about the process, and I personally saw the verbal abuse by animal activists toward people who were standing in line trying to just have their children ride a pony. I decided to highlight my father's experience and my niece's and children's experience to positively advocate for live ponies and animals. There's no replacement for that, in my opinion. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. Cheryl Cuneo, once again asking that we keep ponies and live animals at the Griffith Park Pony Rides. It has been an incredible learning experience traveling to the different venues. Some are amazing, like this place. Some can use a little help. Parks are shared experiences, and what Rec and Parks offers the public is phenomenal. Swimming, skate parks, day camps, Rec and Senior Citizen Centers, historical sites, golf, tennis, playgrounds, adult sport leagues, pickleball, as well as access to nature. But as far as I can tell, there are very few animal-related venues. There's the Equestrian Center with access to trails in Griffith Park. There used to be the pony rides, and there are about a dozen dog parks. I'll talk about that at a different time. We don't need fewer animal-related venues. We need venues that educate and bridge the gap between animal and non-animal folks and experiences. For instance, recently I've heard of issues with bicycles on designated equestrian trails. It seems that signs that forbid bicycles are painted over and gates forced open. There's a debate over shared use of trails and how safe those would be. We need to address the fact that there are both horses and bicycles in LA. What are the right-of-way rules on trails? Where do you, as an equestrian, hiker, or a cyclist, learn them? The answer isn't to get rid of either bikes or horses, but to educate and create good citizens, whether animal or human. Pony rides should be a place where such a dialogue can happen. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Teresa Masonette, and I am on the executive committee of the United Neighborhoods Neighborhood Council. We represent the historic communities of Arlington Heights, Jefferson Park, and West Adams. I'm also the co-chair of the Recreation and Parks Committee. I'm here today to request the restoration of the RAP facility, historic facility, known as the Isidore House. At the request of CD10, RAP consulted with ESA, who in 2022 produced this 400-page report evaluating the current conditions and detailing the necessary steps for restoration. The building is dilapidated with broken and boarded up windows and a haven for vandals and the unhoused. The neighborhood is in desperate need of community space. Right now we have the South Seas House, a historic cultural monument, which regularly suffers wear and tear as one would expect. From a facility that's has programming for children. We need additional community space. Even if it is determined that the restoration of the Isidore House is cost prohibitive, maintaining the facade, updating the interior to today's standards would provide the additional community space. At the very least, we are requesting fencing to prevent further illegal activity around the property. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to have the last three come up. Cindy Starrett, Claudia Burrell, and Tom Beyer.
Good morning, commissioners. I'm Cindy Starrett from Latham & Watkins, and it's a pleasure always to be here. I was one of the founders of the Parks Foundation, and it was wonderful to celebrate the parks last week at our annual event. I'm here, though, because I know how important housing is to this mayor, and I know how important investment in parks is to the department. We have a project called 3100 Wilshire Boulevard that is a high-rise project. It's actually next to the historic Bullocks Wilshire in Wilshire Boulevard. It's an infill project. It's on less than an acre, and the staff is requiring us to dedicate up to 2 acres of land and will not provide an option for us to pay park fees, which would be $4.4 million in the case of this project, saying that that is the position of this commission. So we had a hearing before the planning department last week, and they asked us to go back to the parks department and ask why there's no option for in-lieu payment on this project. We have gone back to staff, and the answer was it was a commission decision. So from a policy perspective, I just ask you to consider infill housing, high-rise housing in an urban area, 4 parks within half a mile, $4.4 million that can be invested in those parks. And yet this particular project is one of the few that I've ever seen in many years of working with the city that is not being given the option of paying in-lieu fees. So we can't provide housing in our city if we condition residential projects with conditions they can't satisfy. You can't get financing, you can't finish the entitlement process. In this case, our team has met repeatedly with the staff, provided evidence that there's no land available within that short distance, the half mile. They've asked.
Thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you. So we just ask that this be looked at and that there be some remedy to try to solve this issue.
Thank you. We'll take a look at that.
Thank you.
First of all, good morning. My name is Claudia Burrell, retired mechanic from the city of Carson. I live in the community, and I have to say the condition of this park is a disgrace. After every event in this park, you got trash all over the place, parking lot, where the case might be. And the seniors that come out here and try to work out like I do in the morning, there's trash, food all over the place. And the sad thing about it, you have disabled veterans that serve this country. And I asked for a ramp for them to enter the stadium, do any kind of event. Until now, a year later, no ramp. When you have the event, Dorsey High School football, the case might be, there's no ramp for the kids who are in a wheelchair to enter the park. Ladies and gentlemen, I live in the community. This park is a disgrace when it comes to the trash amount. The trash is all over the parking lot. We need the manpower to keep this place clean because the condition is bad. On the track right now, you have potholes. Somebody's going to break an ankle. It's going to be a major lawsuit. The potholes are right there. I've taken pictures given to the city officials. I spoke with my council lady, Heather Hutt. I referred the information to her representative. They had lied to me. They had lied to the community. So it's a sad situation. Every weekend, trash all over the place. And the people who manage this park, they have lied to me. They have lied to the community. I met one gentleman who's a new manager of this park. He's sitting back there. I respect him because he's trying to do the best, and I believe him. But the rest of the people I've spoken to, they have lied, played games, whatever the case might be. And like I said, the potholes on the track, it's just a matter of time. The lawsuit is coming. I retired from the city of Carson, and the parks in the city of Carson is immaculate compared to this dump over here. Why do we have to work out in the condition of trash? And you got rats coming out the trash every now and then. It's ridiculous. And the people who run the park, we're trying to do something about it. A year and a half later, 2 years later, let's not play games. I work for two cities in the state. You don't think I know how the game is played? It's called the line game.
Thank you
but
for
when somebody
your
gets hurt, you're going to find out on your own. Just a matter of time. Thank you.
Hi, Tom Beyer, 25-year resident of Los Angeles, 10-year resident of Los Feliz, and I'm extremely disappointed with the removal of the pony rides. In a time when our society is struggling with so much racial tension and grotesque income inequality, the pony rides were one of the only situations we had where all economic and racial groups commingled in such a benevolent setting, with the focus of connecting small children to live animals. It's a terrible loss. And I'm extremely disappointed with the constant misinformation that led to their removal, and that our city and park officials were bent to the will of that misinformation. It's a grotesque irony to me that the protesters were supposedly supporting the humane treatment of ponies while inhumanely screaming viciously at small children. I guess the irony was lost on them. A veterinarian confirmed there was no abuse, but false stories of abuse has won the argument. If we bring back the pony rides, we could easily add a specific code of treatment, a code of perfect treatment to allay any concerns about animal welfare. And we can include that code as the educational part of the experience for kids and their families. The city and park could have created a code like that to address the situation, but instead caved to the demands of extremists who don't understand what makes ponies happy. Very close friends of mine are lifelong animal advocates and professional equestrians. They all confirm that those ponies were living their perfect life with exactly what they want, which is a herd animal to be with their friends doing an activity as enrichment. You can't even get that in a sanctuary, where they might have a volunteer walk them around for a few minutes.
Thank you for your time. Thank you. At this moment, I do not have any further requests for a general public comment, Madam President.
Thank you to Takesha. Let's then move into public comment specific to board items this morning.
I will begin by taking public comments from constituents who are present today at our meeting. If you have further comments, you may send them to our wrap inbox at wrap.commissioners@lacity.org. I'm going to have Lorraine Diaz come up from Council District 2.
Good morning. Nice to see some of you. Thank you for getting me in here so quickly. I was actually hoping to go after our operator because he has more of the inside info. But nice to meet all of you. I'm Lorraine Diaz. I'm with Council President Paul Kerkorian's office. I was kind of a last minute fill-in. Unfortunately, the council member is at a fire department graduation. I came to speak out in support of continuing the tiny home village at Chandler at North Hollywood Park. The council member is very much in support of continuing the lease extension for 3 years if possible, as we did before. It is a very successful site in that we've had many people move on to stable housing. It also helps a lot of the folks that would be traditionally harder to place. Those include
We've had several different combinations, but some variation of, you know, senior citizen, usually a mother, and developmentally disabled adult son, you know, where they wouldn't normally go into housing. We actually had one that I'm actually a little bit close to. You know, senior citizen mother, developmentally disabled adult son, that they'd been living in their car for 2 years because, you know, they could not go into a traditional shelter because the son would be separated and that could put him in danger in a male-female type shelter. This type of housing situation allowed them to stay together and allowed them to, you know, get the services they needed so they could go on. And now those folks are in their permanent apartment, their stable apartment. We've had different variations of that where we, you know, populations that had been on the street for a very long time because, you know, traditional congregate shelters have not worked for them. You know, the trans population, seniors with mobility issues, people with multiple pets, things like that. Our tiny home village has been, you know, instrumental in getting these folks to be more accepting of going into housing and then, you know, make their lives a little more stable so that they're able to get into permanent housing or stable housing, you know, rather than just these interim sites. Chandler has also been a benefit for the community in that they get a weekly cleaning every Tuesday. So we have heard from neighbors that they do feel more comfortable walking in their area, that they do feel that it does stay more clean, less bulky items, things like that, because sanitation does have a regular cleaning route around the area. At North Hollywood Park, before we opened our Chandler Tiny Home site, there were, I think there was something like 80 tents in the park, which, you know, we were constantly having, you know, complaints about, and also crime related to that. We've now been able to get that number down to almost zero. You know, every now and then one or two tents will pop up in the park, but generally the park is clear. Because we are able to offer those folks somewhere, you know, an alternative place to go that is nearby. Oftentimes that is kind of the catch. You know, people don't want to go, you know, humans are creatures of habit. We like to go to the same coffee shop where we go. Same thing for people experiencing homelessness. They like to go to, you know, they like to stay where they are. So being able to offer them a resource close by is incredibly helpful. What else can I say about Chandler? It was our first site, so we've learned a lot from it. But because of that, we've been able to improve the services both on the site and in the community, offer them more, you know, more resources to the people experiencing homelessness at the site and more resources to the park itself. We've brought in everything from concerts in the park to additional police patrol. You know, we mentioned the additional cleanings. Do you guys have any questions for me? Well, I just want to encourage you to maybe please support, you know, continuing this site since it has been beneficial for both the people experiencing homelessness and the community. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you to the council member. I know this is one of many sites, bridge housing sites that are in your district. So appreciate his leadership on the issue.
Thank you. You'll probably be seeing me a few more times. Thank you.
So then I'm going to have the next two come up, Ron Bitzer and Ken Kraft. You all have 2 minutes.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam President, members. My name's Ron. I'm a constituent of CD2. I know Lorraine very well and have a little bit of a different perspective to bring on this issue of tiny homes on public property, public park property. Okay, so North Hollywood, I've got a photo here of North Hollywood Park in 1961. Now, am I the only one who remembers the early 60s? Yeah, I see some. Anyway, what's going on here? You see some earth being moved at North Hollywood Park. It wasn't to erect 30 pallet tiny homes for the unhoused. It was to build a 250-foot wide swath through North Hollywood Park and Valley Plaza Park, then known as Victory Van Owen Park, to erect a freeway. Okay, so when the state basically destroyed character, in my opinion, I've got the map of pre-1961 parks to distribute after the meeting. What was left after the state destroyed the character of the park to build a freeway were these splinter parks. because they didn't put the freeway on one side or another side of the park. They put it right through the middle. So now we have small splinter parks. You might call them neighborhood parks. They're also called pocket parks.
Thank you for your time. Thank you.
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Ken Kraft. I'm the founder and CEO at Hope the Mission. We are the service provider at the Chandler Tiny Home Facility. And for those of you that have never been there, it's a little swath of land. It's a triangular piece of land that was not being used at all. It was dirt, and oftentimes you'd see encampments that were being placed on there. So it really was a good use. I know the city invested a lot of money in order for that to become the very first tiny home community. And one of the nice things about it really is a place where life transformation happens and takes place. We are able to prioritize those that are homeless in the area. When they come on site, they immediately meet with the case manager, and we begin this process of helping and assisting them to exit their homeless experience. And so the case managers will help them with getting basic documentation and then ultimately identifying a place for them to be able to live permanently outside of interim housing. The site, if you've never been there, it gained a lot of national attention because how beautiful it is and how well it was built. The city of Los Angeles did an amazing job. It accommodates pets. We have mental health services on site, substance use treatment on site as well. And we're able to help people, single adults that are 18 and over, to regain their lives. And so I would strongly encourage you to extend this lease, one, just because of the amount of dollars that went into it. To me, it would be sad to invest that amount of dollars and then not allow it to be used, to at least for this temporarily, as we're in a homeless crisis as declared by our current mayor and the previous mayor. And then we have such a strong emphasis with local council members like Councilman Krikorian, who has really led the way in the city of Los Angeles to address this humanitarian crisis of homelessness. And so I strongly encourage you to extend it at least the 1 year, and if possible further, so that we
can continue. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Madam President, I do not have any further requests for board report public comments.
Wonderful. Thank you, Takesha, and thank you for all those who joined us today for public comment. If it is okay with my commission colleagues, I'd like to take item 184 and 186 on consent. Fantastic. So seeing no objection to that, we will take up item 185.
Right. I'm sorry. Okay.
Just one moment. A vote for the consent.
So do I have a motion to take 184 and 186 on consent? I have a second?
Second.
Keisha, can you call the roll, call the vote?
We have a motion and a second to take board reports 23-184 and 23-186 on consent. Commissioner Lloyd, how do you vote?
Aye.
Vice President Sanchez, how do you vote?
Aye.
Commissioner Hudson, how do you vote?
Aye.
Commissioner Tran, how do you vote?
Aye.
President Semerol, how do you vote?
Aye.
And the motion carried.
Thank you for your patience. So we'll take up item 185.
Good morning. My name is Rob with the Planning, Maintenance, and Construction Branch. Board Report 23185 requests that the board recommend a land dedication or a combination of a land dedication and payment of the in-lieu park fee as a condition for VTT 83939 in order to fulfill the requirements of LA Municipal Code 12.33. Map 83939 is located at 21241 Ventura Boulevard in Council District 3 and proposes to demolish the commercial office buildings on the site and construct 111 three-story townhouses, six of which are proposed to be affordable housing units. The project also includes 250 parking spaces and about 3,300 square feet of common open space. There's only one public park within a half mile walking distance of the project site. And since the project is located in an area with limited wrap facilities, and its common open space amenities will not reduce the impact on the park system. Staff is recommending a land dedication or the combination of the land dedication and the in-lieu park fee. Thank you. This concludes my report.
Thank you. I have a question just given the public comment. So we're being asked as a commission to approve either a land dedication or an in-lieu fee. Could it be a combination?
Yes, it can.
And how, once we take a vote, and let's just say, not to prime the pump here, that we approve the staff's recommendation, how then is the negotiations with the developer, how does that transpire to come to a decision of whether or not it's a land dedication and in-lieu fee or a combination of both? How does that process work?
Megan Luera can better answer that.
Good morning, Commissioners. Megan Luera, Planning, Maintenance, and Construction Branch. So following approval from the Board of Recreation and Parks Commissioners for a specific recommendation, that condition language is actually first forwarded to the advisory agency, where the advisory agency will make an official determination on what the condition language will be. So it is up to the discretion of the advisory agency to decide if they keep the language that was recommended by staff and the board, or to overturn said condition and change it to whatever they see fit. Should the advisory agency maintain this condition language as proposed, when the developer is ready to go at their condition, which will be prior to map recordation, staff would work with the developer to identify potential sites either on-site or off-site for land dedication. Typically, the onus is on the applicant to come forward with suggestions once, the condition language is approved and finalized by the advisory agency. But staff does work with them to see what is possible, what is feasible in the area or on-site, and then we would adjust any fee payment accordingly based on how much land is dedicated.
So the advisory agency is the director of planning or a designee. So when you say that if we make an approval for staff's recommendation, the advisory agency can overturn that, it doesn't come back to us for reconsideration. And then the second part of that question is the advisory agency, as the planning director of planning, making that decision as a person, or does it go to the planning commission for a vote?
So if the advisory agency chooses to overturn our decision language and recommended condition, it does not come back to the board for any type of reconsideration. And the advisory agency makes that decision as a person. The case would only go to CPC in the case where, it's appealed, which has only happened on our Rec and Parks condition once by an outside party. Oh, and I'm also by an applicant.
And do you happen to know how many occasions has the advisory agency overturned a commission vote?
Several. I don't have the exact number. We do keep track of those things, but it has happened more than once. Yes.
And do you have, could you share with us the circumstance under which the commission voted in favor of staff's recommendation, it was overturned? Can you give us a circumstance of when that's happened in the past?
So typically it's been in situations where we are requesting a land dedication, and then it's been a variety of conditions. It's been a bunch of different, I guess, opportunities and conditions. One time it was a significant 89-unit condo project in Koreatown that was actually being built on vacant land, and the advisory agency chose to side with the developer, saying that the project was infeasible, but staff hadn't actually had the opportunity to work with the developer to determine if that was true or not. And that kind of is in the same vein of some of the other reasons why the advisory agency has chosen to overturn our recommended condition language. There was another one in CD3. It was a significant development building thousands of units, and they chose to also overturn a recommendation for a combination of fee payment and land dedication. So it varies case to case. Obviously, the designee for the advisory agency is different depending on who the applicant files their project with. So,
appreciate that. Thank you. One last question. Is there a consideration that staff gives to the in-lieu fee? So just to use the public comment that was given, $4.4 million and not an insignificant amount, and that we often have been looking at construction projects that are looking for funding. So is there a process by which staff, when staff is considering a land dedication or an in-lieu fee, that we're also taking into account a project that might be in that half mile radius that's in need of funding that these funds can be used for? Is that part of our thinking from a staff perspective?
Yeah, that information wasn't included in the report as presented to you. But yes, that is a consideration that's taken into account. However, given that, you know, we can't dictate when a particular developer pays a fee, there's no guarantee that money will ever show up ultimately. You know, for various reasons, the developer may not move forward with the project. So that it's kind of hard to make snap decisions based on like, well, we know that this project's coming up, but we don't know when the money will show up. So it kind of creates a problem. Also for that particular project, it was in Council District 10 and they have a significant amount of Quimby fees already available for that district. So given the large amount of dollars available, we were of the opinion that a land dedication would be more valuable and a better way to mitigate the impact of the project as similar to this particular case.
Okay, thank you so much. I appreciate the feedback. Are there any other questions from the commission?
Just to follow up on that. So these developer fees are only paid until they are complete. They complete the project, or they actually get permitted, or they start the construction process?
So as I guess I've summarized, I think maybe previously, we've charged two different types of fees. We charge a subdivision fee, which is for cases that have related track maps. They are required to pay the fee prior to the recordation of their map. So they'll get a LOD or letter of termination from the Department of City Planning with a bunch of conditions from different departments, and they have to fulfill that condition before they can record their final map to subdivide the land or the airspace. So they may or may not have pulled a permit or started construction depending on the sequencing and conditions of their project. And for our non-subdivision fees that don't have track maps, they pay prior to the issuance of certificate of occupancy. So pretty much once construction is over and they're going through final inspections, that's when they'll pay.
And historically, where have these fees, if they're paid, been reallocated? In the budget, or is it up to the department to determine where those funds go and what particular subcategory?
So park fees are required to be deposited into their own fund and are solely under the control of the RAP board. So that's why we come to you when we ask to move money around and constantly. And then as noted previously in other reports, we're required to spend the money within 2, 5, or 10 miles of the development site, depending on the type of park classification, of which we have three.
And then on this for this particular project, where are we in the process? Is this before the advisory agency? Have you spoken to the developer or negotiated this? What is the viewpoint of the developer in terms of providing fees plus a dedication of land?
So I guess we'll give you the whole lowdown of the process. So per the LANC 1233, developers with subdivision maps with over 50 dwelling units are required to have a early consultation meeting with the Department of Recreation and Parks and the Department of City Planning prior to filing a track map application. It is at this meeting before they even file a project that we discuss possibilities of a land dedication, fee payment, or application of the opportunities for and various other exemptions for them to reduce their fees. So we talk to them before they even file their map, and we kind of give them a heads up of like, hey, based on what your project looks like today, this is what we're thinking. And usually, if we're inclined to say that we, as staff, would recommend the land dedication, that's not always met favorably, but we do try and give them a frank and honest, you know, assessment of what staff is inclined to recommend at that point. Once they actually file their track map with the Department of City Planning, that map is distributed to the departments for condition language, and that's the point at which we, as staff, come to you for the official recommendation that we are asking for. And then once you approve it, then it'll go to the advisory agency and they will make a decision. Did that help?
So then what is the net result of your conversation with the developer in particular of this particular recommendation from staff?
I do not recall what they said in the early consultation meeting. We have not talked to them since that meeting, I don't think. So are we discussions once this presentation is included in so kind of am I cutting out? Sorry.
Trying to change it up for you. No, I think it's accurate. So.
Sorry about that. Sometimes also until there is a set condition language, developers aren't always inclined to participate in a conversation about how to fulfill a condition language if that's not the actual final condition language yet. Depends on each developer on how they approach their project. So in the instance of the other developer, clearly they saw the staff report, they've made contact with staff. There have been subsequent conversations and correspondence, but that's not the inclination of every developer.
Yeah, I guess I'm just, so we're approving either an in-lieu fee or a land dedication, but we don't know which one we're approving. We're just giving staff the discretion to negotiate with the developer one or the other?
In this instance, you're approving a land dedication or a combination of the two. So in this particular instance, yes, you're giving staff the negotiation to, or authority to negotiate with the developer, because we know the majority of the time that the developer cannot meet the entirety of the land dedication requirement. Therefore, we ask for the combination so that there's flexibility of like, so we can, you know, adjust. So we don't have to be like, you only can fulfill it with a land dedication.
This will not be, there will be no decision or recommendation out of this that it's just fee only.
No.
Right. But I guess my question is, you haven't negotiated with the developer yet. So what if we approve this and the developer comes back and says, I can't do the land dedication, then what?
Well, we'll work with them to make sure that's actually true, because we don't know if that's true yet. And if that were to be the case, as in potentially this other case, we would come back to the board and ask for you to change the recommendation and submit that change to the advisory agency and ask them to change the condition.
Right. So it would seem to me we need more detail as a commission of whether or not a land dedication or an in-lieu fee plus a land dedication is appropriate, because you haven't talked to the developer yet.
We have talked to the developer in the early consultation meeting.
But when was that?
Sorry.
September 19th, 2022.
So it was a year ago. So inflation is increased, costs have increased. So the entirety of the development project may have changed within that year's period of time. So we're making a determination as a commission today, when the last conversation you had with the developer was last year, over a year ago.
We do take into account if anything has changed between the time we met with them, because, you know, sometimes the project does change when we meet with them versus when they actually file it. So our recommendation is based on what is actually filed with the Department of City Planning.
But it's filed, but you haven't had a conversation with the developer. So it seems to me, before coming to the commission with the recommendation, that you would circle back with the developer to see if they can still meet the condition, as opposed to coming back to us after you have the conversation, when our decision may need to be overturned.
Sorry to chime in. It's Daryl Ford, Superintendent of Planning. So Commissioner Summerall, I guess just for context too, the developers, as staff has indicated after the consultation meeting, they're not required to come back to us. When we modified the park fee ordinance, we specifically put in this requirement for the early dedication so that we had the opportunity to go through the ordinance requirements with them. Because under the previous Quimby fee process, the complaint was, we did not know that these were requirements. So we spend that early consultation meeting to remind them what their requirements are under the code. The point I would like to stress is their actual requirement is to dedicate land. The fees are in lieu. So the requirement is to get space. It is their responsibility to do that, which is why we have that meeting with them before they file their project, to understand what the requirements are. They need to make a choice for their development project about what makes the most feasible sense. The majority of developers, I don't want to speak specifically to this one, don't come back to us. They're not required to. They file their project. They work through a lot of different departments for clearances. But we set a process where we're very clear about what may happen down the road. Ultimately, we're not the decision makers. The advisory agency solely has that responsibility. We can't dictate anything to them, but they have a lot of time where they work on their project. So it is their responsibility to meet it. It's actually a land dedication requirement. It is in lieu if they cannot do that. But it's really their responsibility to say that they cannot do that. And that's why the conversation with staff is, we base our recommendation on what makes sense for the park system. We look to them because they are the experts on their development, how it's financed, how they're subdividing and everything else, to figure out what they want to do. Our desire would be that they come to those early consultation meetings, knowing what the requirements may be, to have a frank conversation about that. We don't always get that, but we don't have any more authority beyond that one meeting where they can't file until they meet with us, for them to come back to us. So essentially we chase them, and we typically don't see them again until they file their maps, and then we start this process off. So I just wanted to share that kind of context for what the point of that meeting is, and I'll just share the last piece, and I apologize. Just we do send them a letter after that meeting that clearly says what their land dedication requirement may be, because we're trying to give them as much upfront guidance as possible as to how the ramifications may play out over the projects. Some readjust, some have conversations, some go forth because they ultimately know, to be frank, we're not the decision makers, the advisory agency is, so they know where to have their other conversations.
No, this context is very helpful. Thank you. But your explanation brought up another question. So if the mandate, for lack of a better term, is the land dedication, are they dedicating land or are they dedicating a completed park?
They're dedicating, the requirements to dedicate land. They're not required to dedicate a completed park. And that's also why you see that staff has evolved the language to a combination of land and fees. Because what we actually are trying to encourage them to do is to give us some land, some fees, either we'll develop it or they can. The code also has revisions for credits where they can develop the property. We would like an iterative process where we actually get a completed park. So when folks move into their new development, the space is there. But we can't dictate that to them. But we try to put as much flexibility for someone who would like to work with us. So correct. They're not required to dedicate land or improve park. They're not even required to dedicate property with buildings demolished. They're really only required to dedicate the land. That's really all that the Quimby Act requires them to do. But we try the flexibility language because we'd like to have a dialogue to get a completed park out of it for the benefit of the new residents and to mitigate their impact on the overall park system.
That's very helpful. Thank you both so much. Are there other questions? Okay, thank you guys. Oh, hi, Megan. 187.
Good morning, Commissioners. Megan Luera, Planning, Maintenance, and Construction Branch. Board Report 23-187 requests the board approve a one-year extension for the operation of the Pallet Housing Project located at North Hollywood Recreation Center. In August 2020, the board approved the construction of the shelter project, which included 35 pallet shelters, one hygiene mobile unit, one modular shipping container offices, and one pallet for storage. The shelter was completed construction in January 2021. On July 22nd, 2021, RAP issued a right of entry permit to the Department of General Services for the operation of the shelter for a period of 3 years. GSD leased the site to Hope of the Valley Rescue Mission for the operation of the shelter. The ROE permit between RAP and GSD expires on January 21st, 2024. On July 7th, 2023, the mayor made a declaration of local housing and homelessness emergency per the authority granted under the Los Angeles Administrative Code, Section 8.33. The declaration of local housing homeless state of emergency is still in effect, and the City Council passed a resolution on October 31st, 2023, to extend the state of emergency an additional 90 days. On October 25th, 2023, the Office of the City Administrator requested that RAP extend the operation of the shelter given the current state of emergency for an additional year. The Office of Council District 2 is supportive of the continued operation of the shelter. Upon approval of this report, RAP will authorize the continued operation of the shelter for an additional 1 year and will issue an ROE permit to GSD for a period of one additional year for the continued operation of the shelter. And as you noted, CD2 and a representative of the operator is available for questions.
Thank you for that report. I have a question that came up about extending for a longer period of time. So I understand that it was a 3-year lease that expired and we're asking for a 1-year lease. Why aren't we able to extend for a longer period of time? And given I'm clear that we are the Department of Recreation and Parks, but this is an extraordinary experience with the extraordinary circumstances with this homeless crisis that we have. And so that we're looking for all ways in which to accommodate temporary shelter, you know, as they move to permanent supportive housing. So I understand that, but these are extraordinary circumstances. It was a 3-year lease. Why aren't we asking for a longer lease?
Hi, Steve Nong, City Attorney's Office. Without getting too much into legal advice for the city, happy to have a conversation offline about it to explain, but one of the reasoning was that to fulfill a park purpose, park land needs to be used for a park purpose. In this case, it would be for homeless shelter, temporary homeless sheltering. In order to comply with that temporary aspect of homeless sheltering, it was determined that on a periodic basis, the board would consider the circumstances at each period of time in order to make a determination once again. Happy to go into a little bit more detail with you offline. Most of it is based on advice from our office, and without divulging without divulging legal advice in a public forum, we'd be happy to give you a little bit more detail about that advice.
But that was similar to my question. So it's not a reflection on the project or the relationship. It's just more of how we want things structured. Okay.
Okay. Then let's have a conversation, because I don't understand what you just said. But are there any other questions from the commission?
But this is a temporary extension. The possibility of extending it further still is the opportunity in the future, correct?
Yes, based on the circumstances at that time.
Can you share what those circumstances would be? Because it was a 3-year lease to begin with. So that's where I'm not understanding the point. It was a 3-year lease. The 3-year lease was executed prior to the executive director by the mayor. So that's not a condition under which, and so it is a temporary situation. Some could argue that 3 years is temporary as well, because we're not giving an extended lease of 10 years or 99 years. So it's 3 years, given the circumstances of the need within the city family.
Correct. At the time, initially, it was 3 years. And at the time, when you count, it's 3 years would seem to be temporary. But after that, each consecutive year, you'd have to count back to the initial 3 years, four, That's five, right. six.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Okay, thank you so much. I think that is it. May I have a motion to approve the two board reports, staff recommendations?
Yeah, motion to approve.
May I have a second?
Second.
Takesha, can you call the vote?
Yes, President Simrell. We have a motion and a second to approve board reports 23-185 and 23-187. Vice President Sanchez, how do you vote?
Aye.
Commissioner Lloyd, how do you vote?
Aye.
Commissioner Hutton, how do you vote?
Aye.
Commissioner Tran, how do you vote?
Aye.
President Simrell, how do you vote?
Aye.
And the motion carries.
Well, thank you. And thank you to the staff for your indulgence of our questions and thorough context that you provide is very helpful. The next item, are there any neighborhood council comments?
I have not received such requests, Madam President.
Thank you. Commission task force updates? Commissioner? Well,
our task force will be meeting after this meeting.
Okay.
Yeah,
I reported at the last meeting.
No update from concessions.
Okay, thank you. Is there any commission business or comment from the commissioners on matters that they would like to have report back on at our next meeting?
I just have one, Terry, about the complaints here. ADA compliant facility. I think that was my one.
And I would like to get a just a follow-up report on the details of the item that Cindy Sterrett brought during public comment, just so we can understand that project more. Thank you. Any other? Seeing none, I think that adjourns our meeting. Our next meeting is when? Our next meeting is scheduled for November 16th, 2023, and excited to be visiting the El Sereno Recreation Center. So we'll see you all there. Thanks again to the staff of the Michelle and Barack Obama Recreation Center. Beautiful facility. We appreciate your hard work. And thank you to all who joined us today. Enjoy the rest of the week.